to kick things off, before we get into speaking a little bit about art, I just wanted to ask you, Shabda, because I was reading your regarding the law of karma, and I thought this was quite interesting. You elaborated a bit on, you know, illusions and mirrors, I guess, at how this works. Is this something you'd care to comment about?
I don't know. The more I try in my own life to see that everything that happens to me is trying to show me the state of my understanding, and the things that I perceive to be negative issues is just a mirror showing me where I'm missing the mark in my thinking, and it's automatic. It's like the universe always mirrors us back to ourselves. And what appears to be problems with, quote, the other person, that is the first mistake that we make, is when we think we're having problems with the other person. The other person is us. And that's the hardest thing.
Yeah.
To see that the other person is us, mirroring us back. That's one of the big question marks with me, because there are certain people, for instance, that I can't be around on a daily basis because I get pulled down. And I think everybody is like this. You know, you have people that you meet that just suck your energy and make you feel depleted. I mean, I think everybody has experienced this. Yeah. And it doesn't mean that even though this is us, this is some dark corner of our psyche mirroring back, maybe that this is a possibility that we could be manifesting, and the fact that we want to throw this from our lives is a statement saying, no, I don't want to manifest that part. I don't know.
It's definitely a fact. It's just a factor. It doesn't have to be a conclusion or an absolute. It's just something at play within the way you perceive that.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So, I mean, do you think that this is just, you know, a dark side of ourselves that we, you know, just don't want to look at or recognize? Or?
Well, the universe supports all possibilities, obviously. There is no God coming down and stopping our wars. I mean, if it's going to get stopped, we're the ones that are going to have to stop it.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And, you know, also, another thing that I wanted to get to today, as we spoke a little about in our mail conversation, was, you know, I had this idea regarding art, and I guess we could apply this to all kinds of art, including music or a simple painting or basically whatever, I guess. But my point here is, I think you could achieve the same goals. You know, we could, as you said earlier, you're reading a lot of David Icke books at the moment, and this obviously, you know, is helping you, I guess, grow and become aware of more stuff and whatnot. But do you guys think that, you know, art could be just as important? I mean, this is not the question of what music or what art is good for this purpose, because this is obviously an individual thing. But the question is, if we can, you know, do you think that a man can look at a painting, a man or a woman look at a painting, and actually become, I guess, more more aware or more enlightened, that something actually clicks inside of that person that helps the person grow?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we do as artists is try to point the way to some of those things. You know, like myself, I often create from like a moment of peak meditation or peak awareness, because that's when I feel moved, when the spirit moves me. I mean, it's part of what I've learned to do is to remain open, and when the spirit moves me, to go with it. So in a sense, you know, if you're an artist who's into the energy in that way, you're always trying to code almost spiritual truth into either an image or into a song or in whatever direction it goes. That's really one of the main reasons you're doing it. It's to infuse it with that taste of the other realms that can be accessible through experiencing the medium.
Yeah, because it feels like, in some sense, the art is very good in that sense that it's not always, I guess, when people view it is, you know, people don't have this idea, perhaps, that the art is trying to, you know, convince them or change them in any way. But on the other hand, if you're, you know, out there trying to awake people with, I guess, information, you can basically pour how much information you want over the person, but they are still close-minded. So in that sense, I guess, art could open up, synapses in the brain or whatever that actually, you know, help, you know, to get the person to awake, basically.
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. Art, any kind of artfully doing something, really expresses all the rest of the universe that words can't express.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that also brings up the point that you and I were talking about. You remember how we were talking about the astral realms and how to understand a lot of what David's talking about? You almost have to have other prior awareness of, you know, certain meditative things and certain mystery school types. I mean, that's pretty kind of advanced in a way that you need to have been exposed. Well, I mean, you could read it, but it means more if you can see for yourself, like the astral landscape, and see how this all doesn't happen just in the physical, you know. But how you said, like, musicians are we were talking about musicians specifically, but it applies for all the other things we're talking about. How they're in the astral realm, they're perceiving astrally, they just don't realize it yet.
Yeah. Or they don't call it by that name. It seems, you know, most musicians don't use occult terminology simply because they just haven't been exposed to it, that's all. It doesn't mean that they're any less in. I mean, everyone's always in the astral realm, you know. I mean, there's no way to be out of it. It's just a matter of whether you want to tune your consciousness and experience that aspect of that part of your consciousness.
Well, yeah, talk about that a little bit. Tune your consciousness. You could go more deeply into that, because that's one thing we were saying. It's not a way, you don't experience it through your five senses, really. It's a different way of feeling or being, or
how would I say? It's a relaxation. Essentially, I would think all of the methods of meditation, at least the methodology part of the meditation, is mainly a crutch to get your consciousness to release and relax away from all thinking, so that there's just a nothingness there. When that happens, then you're out of the matrix. You're out of time. Time doesn't exist in that state. And we all know this. We all knew this on a daily basis as children. And our so-called education and so-called upbringing really shuts all that down.
Yeah.
It's as if, you know, we go through all this filtering that we, under the guise of growing up. And we shut down most of the centers that really are the most joys of life. I mean, all children, no matter how difficult their external circumstances are basically a whole hell of a lot more happy than the adults in the world.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
because they're still connected.
Closer to the source, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and they're very artistic. Everything that they do is artistic.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know, it's just like art. I can't imagine. I mean, I just have surrounded myself in my life, in my house, in my everyday activities with all kinds of artifacts, and you know, whether they be music or paintings or poetry or books or whatever. I can't imagine being without all of that.
Hmm.
Things would be so one-dimensional.
You know what you mentioned earlier also, the I Ching. I'm kind of fascinated by this because I recently linked up to an article on my site, from my site, explaining a little bit about the I Ching, but this is still something I having a bit of difficulty to kind of wrap my head around. Have you studied uh-huh. this for long, Shabda, or you, Chris?
Yeah.
Anyone
yeah,
want to comment on that?
I studied it mainly, yeah, right along with the tarot when I first got into this, yeah.
Hmm.
What's your question about?
I guess kind of the main idea, if you could elaborate on the main idea, because I guess, do you know if it's like an Eastern version of like the tarot, or is it a completely different aspect?
Well, it's the same process.
Hmm.
It's a window into the divine mind, and the hexagrams are basically it mirrors probable human conditions. That's not a very good word. Life scenarios, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it puts it into 64 images. And then each one of those 64 images has a sub-image, six of them. Those are the six spaces mm-hmm. in the hexagram. And the way the thing works, well, I tell you what's really interesting is the mathematical basis of the I Ching is exactly the same down to the last detail of the mathematics found at the center of the Mayan calendar.
Hmm.
And what they have found when you put these mathematics in binary form, now I'm getting way beyond the edge of my understanding of mathematics, but
mm-hmm.
I'm quoting here what I remember from Jose Arguelles' book
Concordance, I can remember.
It was that book.
Yeah, sure.
what he says, my God, I looked at this, and he says, this is exactly the mathematics of human DNA.
Hmm.
Down to the last detail.
Dang.
Hmm.
So, when we look at the I Ching, we're looking at human DNA translated into Chinese and then translated back into English.
Boy, you almost have to wonder if that's alien technology at that point.
No, yeah, it's the I Ching is really a computer program in book form.
Hmm.
It's numbers. It's what it is. it goes back to what everything is so simple, we make it so complicated. everything goes back to the idea that whatever, well, for instance, the whole idea of throwing coins. I don't know how you do the oracle. Do you do the coin? The flipping of the three coins?
No.
Six times?
No, never.
Or do you, how do you contact, do you use the Yarrow sticks?
Nope, nothing. I read about a lot of, I guess, different divination techniques, but I actually am not into any of that at the moment. I mean, tell me about it.
There are two aspects to the I Ching.
Mm-hmm.
One is, I guess, the best explanation really is the Wilhelm translation what is his first name? Frederick Wilhelm? That doesn't sound right. But he translated it from into German.
Mm-hmm.
And then the German translation was translated into English by Cary Bains, I believe is the name.
Mm-hmm.
My memory is not serving me very well. But anyway,
sure.
It's a translation of a translation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the whole first part of the Wilhelm edition is the classic edition in English.
Mm-hmm.
That it's published by Pantheon Books.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a foreword by Carl Jung,
mm-hmm.
where
mm-hmm.
he explains his idea of synchronicity. Now, he's saying the way that, oh man, I'm getting goosebumps here. My guides are here. the way that you ask the universe a question is through this seemingly nonsensical throwing of three coins six times and recording the results. And there's a conversion table in the preface.
Mm-hmm.
to the book that tells you, you know, if you get two heads and a tail, you draw this symbol, and then you work what's called a hexagram up that has six lines each, it's a solid line or a broken line.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then you hold a question in your mind, and you throw these coins. Now, what Jung says is that whatever happens by chance in any moment has symbolized in it the essence of that moment. In other words, he's saying chance is really not the right word. Everything that happens is very pregnant with meaning if we can only get the meaning out of it. The I Ching is the translator box that gives you the moment. So I discovered this while I was at the McDowell Colony in Peterborough, New Hampshire. I had gone there to write a piece. It's a colony where artists and musicians and novelists go to get away from everything. And it's really a neat place. You go in there and you get a cabin in the woods. And basically the people that run it just leave you alone to do your thing. And everybody has a communal meal at the end of the day. And I was talking to this man and wife who were each working on a novel. And Borden Deal and Babs Deal, they started talking about this book, this oracle called the I Ching. And pretty soon there was kind of a buzz around the table because I had never heard of it. And several other artists said, oh, yeah, I've heard of that. I heard about that. So pretty soon we found ourselves going to the Deal's cabin. And after we ate them, there was about seven or eight people there, all going through different various phases of life changes, okay? So each one of us had a question, and so we went around, and the whole evening, we stayed up all night. It was just so fascinating, because we asked a question, and then each person threw the coins, and Borden showed us how to translate that and look it up into the book, and then the book answered everybody's question 100%. I've never seen anything like it. it just zeroed in exactly on the situation and gave advice, boom, right between the eyes. Mm. And some people were going through some pretty hard stuff. They were, you know, contemplating leaving their wife, or their kids were, you know, were having problems with drugs and stuff, and the change just like, boom, here it is. Here's the basic situation and what will happen if you don't change. Mm.
So
I'm not sure if that answered your question.
Sure. It's excellent. It's awesome to get that information, because I think there, it's an interesting system. But I guess also if you get your head around it, it's not so difficult to understand it. Do you know how old it is?
No, I don't think anybody does. From what I remember about it, it evolved from using tortoise shells as, like palm readers do, you know, they look at the patterns on the tortoise shell, and that answers your question. The whole point of all of this is that the universe is trying to make contact with us,
yeah.
And it will use anything at all, to serve as the medium to get through to us.
Do you think
that much I am absolutely sure of, that it is, you know, it's just like, where did I see this? This may even be from the I Ching. Where did this quote come from? Well, the quote is something like this. Oh, no, this is from a Paul Case poem. Thinkest, seeker, that you are seeking me? Not true. It is I who seeks you. Hmm. That's the universe talking. So it's going to use whatever language we say we want.
Yeah, I mean, in some sense, it feels like, you know, it's similar to, I guess, the throwing of the bones and this kind of stuff also.
Yeah.
You know, and it
anything.
Feels, exactly, anything. It feels like we can take whatever we want and toss it or turn it. Or, you know, if you look at something close enough and pay attention to it and try to see the system or the pattern, you will get a communication in it, I guess.
Yeah, I remember going into my studio one day, and I had just a whole lot of rewiring to do, and there was all these patch cords and audio wires all entwined and thrown all over the floor, you know. And I thought, and I remember walking in the room and thinking to myself, man, if I could just read what that means, it'd probably tell me the rest of my whole life, you know. Right here, here it is. Here it is. The mirror is there, you know. It's just, but it was in a language I didn't understand.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, that goes right into the theory that what the universe is a big hologram, and that every part has the whole in it.
Yeah,
has everything.
Exactly. You can't escape it. That's the
that's no.
The idea.
That's it. No.
Yeah. So I mean, I guess that also could, in some sense, freak you out. You can get in a mode where you, I guess, see these patterns everywhere and kind of.
Yeah. Oh gosh, I never get freaked out, do I, Chris?
You're freaking me out.
I guess.
Yes, this is the Red Ash Radio Freak Show.
It's necessary.
Yes.
Get this kind of this Tao moment here. So how about, you know, do you want to dive into, I guess, a little bit, talk about theosophy, studying to that? I did a show recently with Michael Sarion speaking about this. Have you studied this for long, Shabda?
Well, yeah, it's been a long time. Although it was just I think what reading the Theosophists, particularly Ledbetter, Charles Ledbetter, who was a very gifted psychic, and Annie Besant,
mm-hmm.
also a very gifted psychic, that opened me up. I mean, their explanations of what they saw on the inner planes is probably still the most graphic and the best I have ever seen in print. As to, I mean, they discovered so many aspects of the unseen worlds and had a knack for putting these things into words. I didn't study that much Madame Blavatsky, who goes into great detail as to the esoteric knowledge. It's basically the same knowledge that I had learned through my tarot studies, and they're talking about the exact same things. They're just looking at it from through a different window. But what I was going to say is that having read what these people experienced, put the suggestion in my mind that at some point in my unfoldment, I could experience some of the same things. In other words, it put the seed thought in that it would be possible for me to tap into this kind of experience also. And as a result, it was 20 years later, I found myself experiencing remote viewing, experiencing being outside my body, flying above the clouds. Now, and I probably would never have allowed that to happen had I not first allowed the thought that it could happen.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
It's,
yeah, sure.
You know, it's once we open up to the suggestion that, you know, who, me? Well, yeah, why not you?
Yeah.
Why not? Only you're the only barrier.
Yeah, that's a tricky one.
It is. Mm. I mean, we're it's just like David Icke says, we're imprisoned by the matrix, but we're also the prison warden.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. And that's a scary thought, you know, going around policing each other to say what we can and cannot think or do. I
think humanity as a whole is going through a tremendous change in this idea of limits, you know. And I think that one of the positive, more positive forces is this whole series of books by Rowling, the Harry Potter story, opening people's minds to living in a magical universe again. You know, this common sense universe is the pits. Well, it's so limited.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and the question also, I guess, is, you know, are we considering all the material that we, you know, actually have at our disposal, so to speak, at this time? The question is, are we learning as a whole? Are we getting better? Are we getting, you know, closer to the truth? Or, you know, I mean, it's obviously very difficult to generalize here, but I mean, if you, both of you, of course, have an idea about this, where do you think we're headed? Or do you think we will come to a point where we have, you know, collected all of this information would actually help us open up, and then we can actually, you know, I guess, utilize it, implement it, or learn from it?
Yeah. I would say unequivocally, yeah.
I mean, one thing about it, too, is like, you know, eventually, in time, we'll have had the experience of having exposure to all this information, you know. There's still quite a quite a move through this material now, and a lot of people haven't necessarily been exposed to it. But it's so early in the game, you know. You think in a couple hundred years, you know, all of the work we're doing will have gotten everywhere. You know, I don't always think that just like in my lifetime. I think. And historically, I guess, you know, I know I've been benefited by people who did work hundreds or thousands of years ago. And
sure, yeah.
I hope some of my work will do the same for people in the future, and all of us creating that work, you know, bodies of work, and just, you know, having that out there and available really will... It will eventually become part of the collective consciousness, and it will be there.
Here's what I'm counting. I'm counting on the... 100th monkey story to be equally applicable to humans, not just monkeys. And that I'm seeing the whole deal about 2012. I think we're going to have a switch that only a few people realize, but then it's going to play out through the rest of this century, that all the limitations that our current religions force upon people are eventually just going to be dropped. It makes people unhappy.
There's repercussions.
Stupid things like fighting for peace. What?
How does that go?
Fighting for peace?
Yeah, exactly. Peace now. I mean, do you think that also this is kind of the idea from the Mayan perspective? If we again tie this in, that actually the mathematics of the I Ching ties together with the Mayan calendar, and I think it was Terence McKenna who developed a graph on a computer called Time Wave Zero, and this was allegedly before he even knew about 2012. But he measured that, you know, history kind of goes in this time loop, I guess, and everything is repeating itself over and over again, and it's actually going faster and faster. And he kind of said that if we are, you know, sensitive enough, you can feel, you know, Rome collapsing every hour. And and he in this graph, he actually draw this curve, and he said that after 2012 we have reached the point of basically no return, because the spiral is enclosing itself faster and faster and faster and faster. So I mean, it's quite interesting that he also got to this day 2012, as the Mayan calendar also of course ends at that time or thereabouts.
That's even another one. There's another book out. I think that Majors, does that ring a bell?
John Major Jenkins.
Yeah, John Major.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure, absolutely.
He found the same date in Hindu literature and in American Indian folklore. They are all saying 2012.
Sure, yeah, yeah. I mean, so
must be something there. Yeah. So many traditions have zeroed in on that.
Absolutely. And again, I guess, and I've elaborated on this previously, even if this doesn't have an effect in itself, at this point, I think so many people are aware on that date and actually focus on it. And because of that itself, things will actually start to unravel.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Yeah.
Either way, I guess we're in for big change, because I think that is needed at this time to get away from the stagnation that is occurring within our culture and society.
Yeah. Well, I hope it means that the Illuminati collapse.
Yeah, sure. Exactly. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean...
Their whole conspiracy gets exposed.
Yeah, exactly.
To the point where enough people are aware of it,
and to also,
of course, that's their fear. Yeah. That's the fear,
of course. And to also come to a point where you can realize that these forces actually have been instrumental in helping us to to wake up and recognize that there actually is, in all of that darkness and all of that, there is actually some good to it in that sense.
Yes. Yeah.
So again, this is not, as I said, this is not about a violent overthrow of these people at all.
No.
But we have to, of course, become aware of it and recognize it before we actually can do something about it. So
yeah.
It's a delicate balance, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, if everybody starts seeing through all the deceptions, the deceptions are going to fall like a house of cards.
Yeah. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Just on a total side note here, I just want to get you guys. I just want to throw out this idea from, again, actually Terence McKenna, who stated that UFOs basically are, see, one idea on it at least was that these actually are manifestations of a people or a society or a culture in, I guess, stagnation. That this is the ultimate form of, you know, weirdness coming about into a society to kind of wake people up in any way possible. So we actually subconsciously manifest these things. What have you guys? What's your idea about UFOs? Got any theories?
Well, from what I can tell, that the aliens have never left from 18,000 years before BC.
Mm-hmm.
They've been here all along. And I think the biggest cover-up that's ever been was that, I mean, which all governments try to do, is to poo-poo the idea that, or to try to reinforce the idea that we're alone here on the Earth. It's just simply not true.
Mm-hmm.
Just not true.
Yeah, I mean, like, one of my favorite things is that I think about it is just realizing also that there's an extraterrestrial element in the sense of people from different places in the universe or different star systems or different galaxies coming into the body. So already the way I see the landscape is we got some people from maybe one area of space that resonate with these kind of things, some other people from another area, you know, just like entities that flew in and decided to have the Earth experience. You know, and I think that some people actually maybe are born here and they're going to be here for a while and finally maybe someday leave and go somewhere else. So I think there's that kind of element. And I think as far as like the ships or whatever, you know, I have no problem at all with that. I mean, you know, even the governments of the world probably have some UFOs of their own by now.
You look at
stealth, and then you figure that they've got something way better than that they just don't talk about. You know, they could already be cruising around. You know, some people somewhere that have a ship, they could be already doing things that would blow our minds.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I think that there may be pockets of a little more open alien contact. You know, there could be underground places where this happens. I kind of feel like there might be, you know. And I think
there's certainly an awful lot of literature coming out about that.
Yeah. that really interests me. It feels like it might be so. You know, I kind of get the feeling that there are kind of underground secret layers where all kinds of crazy shit happens. You know, I think some of that hybrid, you know, breeding, you know, different kind of creatures, I'm sure they are tinkering with DNA, the horrible, you know, all the horrible experiments that are supposedly outlawed on the surface. They're doing all that stuff somewhere. Somebody is, you know. And, I've heard and thought of aliens, too, as being like kind of almost just in that same place, the astral, you know, like just out of the physical, but then they can kind of slow down into the physical for a while and then zip back up, maybe just phase out. Maybe they can phase out a little bit like that. And that's why they can do the kind of turns and things like that we don't
I was telling you before we got on the air that I had just finished reading in an appendix of David's book, the one that I just finished, what's the name of it?
Is it his latest book?
Only Infinite Love is the Only Reality. Everything else is illusion.
Yeah, Only Truth. Everything else is illusion. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's an appendix in the back that he, it was an add-on that after he had written the book, he read this Russian, it was either a book or a technical paper.
Yeah, I think
that
it was
Russian scientists.
Paper. Yeah.
That they had actually experimented with animal DNA and successfully did a shapeshift from one form to another.
Yeah.
And they did it in the laboratory.
Yeah.
So that just says, okay, guys, if the scientists have already done that, that means we're ready to see it happen on TV.
Yeah.
Or if it's we're ready to have that be common knowledge in the near future.
Yeah.
Just like you were saying, you know, after a while you start seeing it everywhere, and even the way you watch movies changes. You know, they're giving you tip-offs.
Oh, I know. I know. Like yeah. I mean, that's just everywhere now, and all the special effects, all the TV ads. It's as if the Illuminati TV network is trying to get us used to the idea.
Yeah, totally.
Through their advertisements.
Hmm. Which is, again, very interesting considering what, you know, who are these people? Are, you know, they're trying to educate us in that sense, you know, to. But again, I guess that it only, you know, what it says is that, you know, they are educating us like we are in this, you know, playpen, basically. We're not allowed to, you know, get all the juicy good stuff, the
right.
secrets, the mysteries, and all of this stuff. So
right.
I guess it says something about, you know, how they look at us, I guess, or view us.
Yeah.
But again, the question is, are we ready for all that stuff? I mean, are we ready to, you know, have our own spaceship and go out in the universe and
sure.
fly around?
Sure.
Or
why not?
Yeah, sure.
Let's just go for it, man. I would go. Yeah. I'd be the captain of the first yeah. world ship that, out of here. Yeah. I'll be cool to everybody. Yeah. Things going well.
Absolutely. You know, guys, we're actually totally out of time here. So I want to kind of wrap things up here.
All right.
Okay. This has been a wonderful discussion again. And,
oh,
and,
yes, well, really
I mean, you have your Shabla, you have your own corner on Chris's site, I guess. And
yes.
So,
yeah.
So Chris, tell us about your website and also, of course, about Shabla's corner that he got.
Yeah. Well. There. Yeah. The site is creativecosmos.org, and you know, there's all kinds of cool things there. There's the Planetary Forum, where Shab's articles are right now, and Henrik will link him. And I made a special part on the site called Shab's Corner. You see a little picture of him and the word Shab's Corner. You go there, and all the things Shab's doing, the radio shows and his articles, and some of his favorite links. And we're putting everything there, so you can check it out and have easy access to reference material about what he's been saying and talking about, and get some of his writings out there for you all to enjoy, because they're really great. They're really great to read. So check those out at Shab's Corner. And, yeah, drop me a line anytime at the good old creativecosmos.org. Always glad to speak with anybody. So best wishes to everybody out there. And as always,
yes.
Henrik, this is
ditto.
Great blessing in my life to have the chance to talk with you every month and to have you as a friend. So thank you.
Thank you so
yes.
much. Yeah, this has been great, guys, and I hope we can again continue this at either next month or, you know, you're welcome back to any time, Shabda.
Wonderful.
Okay, thank you very much, guys.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
See ya.
Thank you so much for listening to the show, and thanks to Fredrik Palmgren behind the controls. We will be back this Sunday with our good friend Freeman. We'll be talking about movies and our modern occulture, so lots of good stuff coming up. So stay tuned to redicecreations.com. Take care, and we will talk soon. This is Henrik Palmgren signing off.
Radio.